The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Hello, everyone, all you listeners out there. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Blacks in Business Radio. I am one of your hosts, Cece Harry, and I am joined by my co-host, Brother Robert 11X. Robert, are you there?
Yes, I am, Cece. How are you today?
Woo, I am so happy to be, like they say, in the land of the living. So many things are going on around the world as usual. You know, for one, I lost my grandmother earlier this week, or the woman I knew as my grandmother, my grandfather's wife in Alaska. It's kind of a sad story. You know, she was fine and well, and she took care of him since the year, I think, 2000. Thank you, Scotty. Year 2000, he kind of developed like this Alzheimer's, but she was taking care of him for 17 years and she was fine, because I went and saw her last year. She was just fine. She was the same Mary that I knew, okay? But then he passed away this past April, and right after that, I kid you not, she immediately had a decline in her health, and it just is amazing how a broken heart can just make you sick and then even die. She was with him, I think, since she was 14. So they were together 60 something years, I believe, 70 somewhere. They were together a long time. So, you know, just keep my family in your thoughts and in your prayers, you know, as they try to get through this time. But yeah, you know, tomorrow is not promised. We know that. And again, you know, we see these different things we see these different things in the news, you know, this thing going on with the school, the shooting, and just, you know, just the crime here in general in St. Louis. You know, it could be kind of overwhelming. So it's kind of a little break to have shows like what we have here to talk to people about, you know, being uplifted in business. So I am thankful for this platform and you and Scotty and everybody else that makes it possible by even being on the air. What's going on with you?
Oh, outside of trying to make sure that this Lyft ride picks up one of the people who are working for us at the current moment.
Oh, you're using Lyft? I used Uber last time, I think.
Oh my God! Okay.
What happened? Yeah. Oh Lord, I didn't even realize what you were saying. Sorry, you guys, we're having some logistical problems at our store. I'm sorry, I totally did not even know what you were saying. Oh man, yeah, I used Uber when I, yeah, okay. So just to let you all in on the situation, my sister works at our store and she's there with her two children. So what we do, because it's late at night, we provide a Lyft or an Uber for her to get home. She lives about 5 minutes away, but we don't want her walking home in the dark. So Robert had messaged me. Robert had messaged me, and you know what I thought you were talking about? I thought you were talking about you trying to drive for Lyft. Nobody responded to you. Oh,
no.
My goodness. Oh, okay. Can you try Uber?
Yes, I'm going to do that now.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Okay. Sorry, you guys. This is operating business. This is some of the things that happen. You know, what happens is my sister, you all might have saw me on Facebook Live. I was promoting the show, but I was there for a minute. My sister comes in the morning, and then I take over for her for a minute. And then, like, Thursdays are super busy for me. So after she gets her children, she comes back. So, again, because it's late at night, we provide an Uber or a Lyft for her to get back home because it's dark. Robert had messaged me and said nobody is responding from Lyft. And I thought because he's trying to drive for Lyft, he was talking about, oh, well, they're not responding to his request to be a driver. And I thought that was kind of random. I'm like, okay, we're about to go on the air. Why are you worried about Lyft right now? But I didn't say nothing. I was like, okay.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so I totally get it. Okay, we lost somebody. I guess we're having comedy hour too much for people, but it's all right. So anyway, again, this is business. You know, you hear us operating ours, you know, as we speak. You know, sometimes it's a little difficult thing. We come into different situations. And that is actually what our show is about tonight. Tonight, we are going to be interviewing Ms. Ruth King. And let me read her information. It says, Profitability Master Ruth King is founder and CEO of Profitability Revolution, LLC. She is also president of Business Ventures Corporation. Ruth has a passion for helping businesses get and stay profitable, utilizing the latest technology that makes sense to use. After 12 years on the road doing 200 flights per year, she knew there had to be a better way to reach business people who wanted to build their businesses and train their employees. She began training on the internet in 1998 and began the first television-like broadcasting in 2002. Her channels include www.hvacc or HVAC Channel TV. Let's see, and then she has profitabilityrevolution.com. That's the platform I know her from. Ruth holds an MBA in finance from Georgia State University and bachelor's and master's degree in chemical engineering from Tufts University and the University of Pennsylvania, respectively. She started the Decatur, Georgia branch of the Small Business Development Center in 1982. She also started the Women's Entrepreneurial Center and taught a year-long course for women who wanted to start their own businesses. This course was the foundation for one of the classes at the Women's Economic Development Authority in Atlanta, Georgia. More recently, Ruth was the instructor for ICE, the Inner City Entrepreneur Program, in conjunction with the Small Business Administration. This 16-week course taught business owners with at least $400,000 in revenues, and many had over $1 million in revenues, how to grow to the next level. A large part of the curriculum was aimed at improving the financial knowledge of the business owners enrolled in the course. Ruth is passionate about helping adults learn to read, photography, and marathon races. She has run 14, including two Boston marathons. She helped start an adult literacy organization in 1986 that currently serves over 1,000 adults per year. Her latest book, The Ugly Truth About Cash, is preceded by the number one best-selling book, The Courage to Be Profitable, which explains how to get and stay profitable in less than 30 minutes a month in English rather than counting or accounting babble. She is also the author of two other award-winning books, The Ugly Truth About Small Business and The Ugly Truth About Managing People. Wow. Well, I'm definitely excited to talk about these subjects with Ruth. I appreciate Ruth because she's very reachable, you know. Some of these people that have these different platforms, they're like unreachable. And if you have questions, it's like, okay, you send your questions into this email server type of thing and you hope somebody gets back to you. No, Ruth is very reachable. And I appreciate her platform because, you know, she has a subscription service that is actually worth subscribing to. You know, she has several videos. You can also find her on YouTube. But if your business is looking to go to the next level, I would say subscribe to her information, and she'll of course tell us about that. But what we're going to do in the first hour until she gets here, because she's going to come on in the second hour, we're going to just read the book, you know. And I think we should do this more often. We should read the book. You know, you all don't feel like reading the book or whatever. I mean, sometimes you don't make time to read the book, but
I think if we actually read the book, you can just listen along, you know, as you're washing dishes or getting your children ready for bed or whatever it is that you're doing. We'll go ahead and read the book so that, you know, we can remain connected. I won't just throw this book out there and expect you to read it and know that you really don't have time to do that. So for you entrepreneurs out there, we're going to get this started. So, Robert, what do you think about the subject matter?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay. So before we go there, this whole Uber thing is just driving me crazy.
Is that working?
No, it's not working. I got to register it all over again.
Okay. Well, do you want to... oh, my God. I know. Just have her call a cab, and she has money there.
Right. So let me text her. And I, you guys keep talking.
Oh, no, we're fine. I thought you were saying, oh, my God, because you're just so excited about the book. But
that too, I really want to go there, but I really want to make sure Harlan's okay. But I definitely want to talk about this whole show because this is, you know, I love entrepreneurship. And there are so many things on the flip side of it that we deal with as being entrepreneurs that a lot of people take for granted the amount of stress that this can cause dealing with people stealing from you, undermining you, just taking ideas, coming around with alternative motives. Just there's so much involved in being your own boss, which is self-employment, or being a business owner. And that's two different things, self-employment and business owner. That's two different things. But there's so much involved in the both of them, you know, when it comes to dealing with people that, man, I tell any man, cut your hair off before you get started, because if you don't, you will be pulling your hair out of your head sometimes. So just cut it all off, go bald before you get started good, okay? Mm. And after you learn... after a few years, you almost know what to look for. After a couple of years, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, you won't be surprised by anything. And then grow your hair back then, okay?
I think that's probably, you know, pretty accurate because of the things that you have to deal with, you know. But you gotta love it. You gotta love business. And you'll show yourself really true to your business when you can find solutions to those barriers that are causing you, you know, heartache and pain in the thing that you love. So we should go ahead and get started. I'll let you handle that, and I'm going to go ahead and read. And you all, I hope you don't mind, but this is the platform that we're doing today. We're going to read a book today. And if you have any questions, you can surely call in and talk to us. The phone number is 704-802-5056, press **, and we will surely get you in with no problem. And again, I thank you for you all that have joined us and that are still listening in. If you have any questions, just press **. Just interrupt me. It's all right. Okay. So we're going to get started with the book. I thought it was pretty cool. I was going to use my iPad and just use it as a reader, but nope, it died. But nevertheless, here we go. The Ugly Truth About Cash: 50 Ways Employees and Vendors Can Steal From You and What You Can Do About It. And this is, again, is by Ruth King. And, you know, there's a foreword and all kind of information. This book is dedicated to the millions of hardworking small business owners. That's you. May the stories in here help you protect your hard-earned cash, okay? So the table of contents is pretty lengthy. Let's see here. It says, my personal story with theft, why people steal. Let's see, theft stories. My bookkeeper was going through a nasty divorce. In my opinion, the sneakiest and most ingenious way to steal. A trusted employee was stealing petty cash. I almost hired an embezzling CFO. Don't give out bonus checks. Don't use signature stamps. My auto repair shop tried to steal from me. My payroll clerk was overpaying herself. Don't get a divorce if your wife is the bookkeeper. The bankruptcy court made me give a payment back. I went to the ladies' room in the middle of preparing a bank deposit. Let's see. I was signing checks for ABC Company, and the vendor is ABC Corp. Robert was reading that to me yesterday. I didn't understand, but basically, I do get it now. She was signing checks for that company, and she was being taken because that company was that company, basically. An employee accepted a post-dated check. That's a no-no. I paid $3,718 for employees to eat at their desk. An employee stole a check from the bottom of the box of checks. My bookkeeper was making fake deposits in QuickBooks. Payroll company didn't pay our payroll taxes. My bookkeeper was giving me financial statements with negative gross margins. And it goes on and on. I'm telling you, this is truly the ugly truth about cash. And I guarantee you, if you are an employee, you have dealt with some of these things that Ruth is talking about. Okay, so let's see here. Okay, the forward. Now, Robert, I just kind of muted you for a second because there's some noise coming from your phone. You can unmute yourself, of course. Just press **. Okay, so the forward, let's see. At the end of the business day, you always lock the doors of your office, shop, and warehouse. And yet those properties probably have windows that can be easily breached. You install a security system, but we all know that any determined intruder can do their worst and be gone before the authorities respond. We've all heard the ancient proverb, locks are to keep honest people out. So it would seem that locks are really for two purposes: to inconvenience the bad guys, make them work a little harder to get at your stuff, to tell the honest people that what's on the other side of the lock isn't free. You can't just wander in and help yourself. After employees work for us for a while, we begin to trust them enough to toss them a set of keys to the building. Plus, we give certain employees access to financial controls. Obviously, with such gestures, we deem these people to be honest. But are they more honest and resistant to temptation than the people we put locks on the doors to deter? Of course, we hope so, but they're still people. Aren't they subject to all the character flaws, poor decision-making, personal challenges, and shortcomings of any other human? Ruth King thinks so, and she has the stories to prove it. Okay, so that's the first part of that. I'm going to unmute you, Robert. There we go. Okay, so that's part of the forward, okay? And that forward is by Jim Blazingame, author of The Age of the Customer and The Third Ingredient, host of the Small Business Advocate Show. So that's worth looking into. Okay, so the introduction talks about why people steal. Are you okay? Are you responding to the book?
No, I'm actually trying to pull the book up so that I can join into this conversation.
Okay, well, I'm going to send it to you right now so you don't have to worry about pulling the book up.
Thank you.
And there you go. No problem. I'm so sorry. Okay. No, I apologize. Excuse me. Introduction, why people steal. In the 30s, if people knew what we were talking about, I mean, our life is so animated. But in the 36 years I have been consulting with and coaching small business owners, one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do was tell two partners that a third partner was stealing at least $50,000 a year from their business. It probably was more. However, I felt horrible. I didn't want to dig any further. Theft is the most heart-wrenching thing I have to deal with. You work hard. You never expect people to steal from you. When they do, your first reaction is disbelief, then sadness. And nobody talks about it until now. It is time that someone did. Small business owners like you work too hard and invest too many hours to have your money and other assets stolen. This theft could cause serious cash flow problems and damage your business if not caught. This book gives you simple, easy procedures to put in place to keep the honest people honest. And I think that's so important what she said, or what the forward actually said. You know, we just begin trusting these people and toss them some keys. You know, we just start being kind of lackadaisical in what our security measures should always remain to be. You know, and I could see it really being a mistake in first time businesses, you know, but once you've been through so many things, you really amp up your security issues or your security measures, I should say. And that doesn't mean just having, like, you know, cameras all over the place. I mean, there's so many other things that you have to set in place. Okay.
But I want to comment on that. Let me
okay,
just say, and to add to that, I mean, as much as you can do all that you can to secure your business, you know, employees, some that are out to try to get over, they're watching your every move in your business. Some are so good that they study. They actually will act like they're trying to be a great helper, and they're actually studying how to find the loophole, find the crack in the system. And this is why we have to be, you know, very, very conscious of everything that we do, and constantly always going over having the mindset of, or trying to have the mindset of, how a criminal thinks in your business. You just can't protect yourself enough from these type of things.
Right, I definitely agree. And that's why this book is so important, because, you know, these things kind of get brushed under the rug. And, you know, you and I were talking about yesterday, if somebody's stealing a nickel from you a day, I mean, that definitely adds up, you know. We tend to just think about large amounts of money, but if somebody's just simply stealing a nickel from you a day, I mean, you on your way to some real negative numbers, seriously.
Yeah, you are.
Mm-hmm.
You better believe it.
So her personal story with theft says, my father was a brilliant trial defense attorney. One of the partners in his law firm handled all of the real estate closings for the firm. When the real estate market tanked, there were not many closings. People in the firm started wondering how he could maintain his lifestyle. My father was forced on a different area of law. Oh, no, I'm sorry. My father was focused on a different area of law and didn't pay much attention to the real estate transaction. One of the junior attorneys found out that the other partner was stealing the closing fees and told my father. At first, my father was like most business owners. He couldn't believe that his partner would do something like this. However, when he investigated it, my father found out that it was true. He had this partner disbarred and making monthly restitution to him, the other partners, and subsequently their wives, including my mother, when the original partner passed away. The event also broke up his law firm. I watched this unfold as a young adult. When my father passed away, I made sure that another attorney would handle the distributions. The attorney I chose, the one who found the theft and told my father. This embezzlement had a great impact on me. I became very aware of business theft, how it hurt businesses, and the emotional impact on the business owners' lives. I share these stories because I hope this never happens to you. Implement the suggestions in this book to keep the honest 99% of people honest, and use those tools to watch out for the remaining 1%. Well, it's kind of comforting that she calls 99% honest, but 1% not honest. That's very interesting. But do you see what I see in that part of that story? Her father actually was able to set up some generational wealth, it seems, because, you know, he was able to sue that guy to where he was paying restitution to their family, which is a good thing. That's a wonderful thing. But yes, so it says, next up is theft stories. These are stories of how employees and vendors steal from you and how you can protect yourself. Okay. So, my bookkeeper was going through a nasty divorce many years ago when companies still got their bank statements and canceled checks in the mail each month. I needed a new bookkeeper. I found one who was competent in the first 3 years she was with the company. She produced accurate financial statements and made very few errors. During her third year of employment, her husband and she decided to split up. It was a nasty divorce and was affecting her work. We were understanding and told her to take as much time as she needed. To make an already miserable situation more miserable, one day her attorney called her and said that if she didn't give him $3,000 within a week, he was dropping her case. She didn't have $3,000, so she forged a check, thinking, I get the bank statements and I will just pull the check out before I balance the checkbook. No one will ever see. My gosh. A few days later, I got a call from my banker asking me if I knew Attorney X. I said no. The banker said that he had a check written to his attorney with a signature that looked odd, so he decided to call. I raced to the bank to look at the check. No, I didn't write it and sign it. No, I don't know that attorney. I went back to the office and confronted the bookkeeper. She denied it at first, then after more questioning, she broke down crying and admitted that she forged the check. My comment to her, why didn't you just come to us? You know we loan money to our employees because you take the repayments out of their checks each week. She just looked at me. Because she was thinking emotionally rather than rationally, she spent 3 years in jail for forging a check. Oh my gosh. Oh, they were not forgiven. They sent that woman to jail. Goodness. It says, what I learned. When normally honest people get in trouble, they stop thinking rationally and start thinking emotionally. This is where theft problems can begin in procedures and not in place to come. Wait, let's start over. This is where theft problems can begin if procedures are not in place to keep the honest people honest. Wow. What do you think about that, Robert? Uh-oh, Robert, we cannot hear you, or I cannot hear you at least.
I'm sorry, I had myself muted. Now I got to find where I was at. But what that says to me, right, can you hear me now?
Absolutely, go ahead.
So it says they had to implement a plan to keep the honest people honest. Let's just say this, everybody. I heard this before, that you don't know what you would do unless you're put in desperate situations. People say what they wouldn't eat. But when hunger gets on your behind like you've never experienced the natural urge to eat, see, we're comfortable with eating right now. But if, let's just say hypothetically, we were in a situation where we couldn't eat for 14, 15 days and hunger sets in. It's just like it would be the equivalent to not being able to pay your bills. Your family is dependent upon you. Nothing looked like it's going to get better. And you're at work and you're trying to be very honest, but nobody is really trying to hear you, or you may not even want anybody to know anything, but you know you're at that last payment day or bill pay day, or everything is going to get turned off, or the eviction notice is going to go out, and yet you see an opportunity to resolve that problem with, in your mind, I'm just going to take this cash and I'm going to put it back. But prior to that, you never done that. You always say, I would never dream of doing that, until you're put in that position. So this is that honest person that they had to come up with a plan to protect themselves from. The honest person that is not normally a thief, but is put into some type of real situation that would tempt them to take, and if the temptation is strong enough, even the best of us may slip at some point in time. Even the best of us. So in order to avoid that, we want to put in effect something that is not, that's going to protect us and protect you from being able to stoop to that level to where you think you just got to take this money. And that's how I see that.
Right. Well, you know, I had actually advertised this on Facebook, you know, what we're doing tonight. And somebody had said that you offer its incentives to your customers for using their debit card or credit card, so you as cashless as possible. I thought that that was nice, and I thought that that was interesting, and it would be very good, but you don't really see a, well, I don't know, maybe because of where we are, but I think there are some businesses that are moving toward cashless. Like when we were in Chicago, we went to that one restaurant, and that was all that they accepted was the debit card. That is one solution, but then how many people are you eliminating out of business that, you know, only use cash? I mean, I guess you have to kind of weigh it out. Yeah, you have to weigh the pros and cons of that. But it says what I learned. Let's see. Or did I read that? When normally honest people get into trouble, they stop thinking rationally and start thinking emotionally. This is where theft problems can begin if procedures are not put in place to keep the honest people honest. Implement these company procedures. Here you go. Here's a solution. Your bookkeeper should never have check signing authority unless your bookkeeper is your spouse or owns a significant piece of the business. If the bookkeeper is this real life story, or if the bookkeeper in this real life story had check signing authority, it would have been more difficult to prosecute her, because with check signing authority, you have given that bookkeeper the authority to write any checks that she wants to write. See story 44. In this case, she didn't have the check signing authority, so it was clearly theft and much easier to prosecute. So that tells you that you actually need to be mindful of the roles that people have too in your business. You know, right. Like, you know, for instance, you know, if you're a small mom and pop, you know, okay, how many roles does this one person have? You know, does the one employee have? Do two employees have? What checks and balances system do you have to where you can make sure that these thefts aren't happening that way? I mean, that was really good that her bookkeeper didn't have that authority, but she still used it. Okay, it says also send your bank statements home. If the owner had received the statements at home, the bookkeeper knew that the owner would see the check first, and she would have been less likely to forge a check. Sending your bank statements home lets you see all of the check pictures before anyone else. You can make sure that the checks are correct and that your signature is on all the checks, as well as be notified of bounced checks, late loan payments, and other banking issues. That's a good idea. Okay, mm-hmm. And then it says, in my opinion, this is number two. In my opinion, the sneakiest and most ingenious way to steal. Okay, let's read about that one. I discovered the sneaky and ingenious way to steal from a company when a business owner called me and asked if I would help him make sure his pricing was correct. I said yes and asked him to send me his year-end profit and loss statements and balance sheets from the past 2 years. When I got his financial statements, I put his expenses in my overhead calculation sheet to calculate his overhead cost per year. The expense totals...
Per hour.
Okay. The expense totals didn't match what was shown on his profit and loss statements at first. I didn't believe it, even though I was using Excel, and Excel never made any addition mistakes. So I added up the numbers on an old-fashioned adding machine. The numbers didn't match. I realized that this was the most creative way to steal I had seen in more than 30 years. No one, including me, thinks to put the numbers you see on your profit and loss statement into a spreadsheet to ensure the numbers match actual expenses until now. Figure 1 shows the number from the company's profit and loss statement in comparison to the number I calculated. You can see the difference. Well, you can't see the difference. You just got to take my word for it because I'm reading. There are some categories like payroll expenses where the spreadsheet matched the numbers on the business owner's profit and loss statement. However, there were many more categories that didn't add up. When you total the numbers, my calculation was $51,765 less than what was stated on the company profit and loss statement. Long story short, the owner's profit and loss said expenses were $637,510. The spreadsheet added to $585,745. There was more than $51,000 missing. Oh my gosh. So, of course, we have this pictured here in the book, and maybe we'll put that in our Facebook page so that you can see what I was talking about. But definitely, you know, we're going to make an opportunity for you to get this book. Okay, so it says, what I learned, in this great way to steal, you almost never add up the numbers on the profit and loss. You assume that they are right. $51,000 out the door is easy to hide because of your assumption. A few dollars here, a few dollars there, no one will ever catch it. That's a lot of money, $51,000.
Right.
Implement this company procedure. Enter the expenses stated on your profit and loss into a spreadsheet. Make sure that they match. You don't have to do it every month. Do it a few times a year. I don't know. You might need to do it every month. Lord, have mercy. Shoot. Okay, it says, a trusted employee was stealing petty cash. I kept petty cash in two places. Less than $200 in a locked cash box and several thousands of dollars in a safe that held the cash we didn't want to keep in the cash box. This money eventually was deposited into our operating account. The bookkeeper was responsible for counting the petty cash and reporting it once a month on the financial statement. She delegated this responsibility to an employee who seemed to be honest and hardworking and rarely, if ever, missed a day of work. I bet. In addition, this employee was financially secure and didn't need to work. The bookkeeper trusted this employee and stopped verifying the amount of petty cash that she reported on the balance sheet each month. One day, the bookkeeper went into the safe to find some documents. She noticed that the petty cash that was there seemed to be a lot less than what was reported. She counted it and found that $6,000 was missing. This was strange, and she came to me. Only three people had access to the safe and the petty cash lockbox. One person almost never dealt with petty cash, and the bookkeeper, who had the access to the safe and delegated the responsibility for it to the other person. It had to be this third person. I brought all three employees into my office one at a time, and I asked the same question to all three. Watch their reactions when I asked the question. In addition to listening to their answers, the person who I assumed took the cash was totally uncomfortable with the questions, and her story changed from day to day. Originally, she said that the money was in the lockbox and someone stole it from the box. I got $6,000 from the bank, which I immediately put back in, and asked her to put the $6,000 in the cash box. Obviously, it didn't fit. Deduction: she had to have stolen the money. I was shocked. She was the last person I ever thought would steal. She didn't need the money. She had been with the company for many years, showed up on time, did her job accurately, and on time was willing. Wait a minute. Excuse me, guys. I'm reading from a tiny phone. The phone font is so small. Okay. She had been with the company for many years, showed up on time, did her job accurately, and on time was willing to work overtime when necessary, and was, from my perspective, a good employee. I fired her and instituted more stringent petty cash reporting procedures. I now count the petty cash occasionally and never at the same time each month. Okay, so it says, what I learned, remember that the job of a good embezzler is to become the trusted bookkeeper. Ooh, someone who is not the person dealing with day-to-day petty cash must verify the cash amount reported on the financial statement every month and not assume that the person handling it can be trusted. Implement these company procedures. Petty cash must be verified each month. If money is taken from petty cash, receipts must be given for that amount. When the petty cash gets low, the amount of the receipts is replaced with a check cash at your bank. Don't keep thousands of dollars in petty cash. Put all amounts over a few hundred dollars in your bank.
Even if you have two people handling petty cash, the owner should count it occasionally. Okay. So, Robert, are you ready to read number four?
Yes, I am. I almost hired an embezzling CEO, my CFO, that's a chief financial officer, ladies and gentlemen. My longtime CFO was moving to another state. She gave me plenty of notice and, excuse me, this is very small, I'm reading from the phone. She gave me notice and she would train her replacement. I appreciated her willingness to leave on good terms and help the new CFO navigate the nuances of how we handle our accounting. I reached out to my friends and colleagues asking them whether they had knew a competent CFO looking to make a career change. A friend suggested a woman, and I contacted her. She came in for the first interview. She passed. My current CFO and I liked her. We both thought she could do the job. The next step was a comprehensive bookkeeping test. We gave this test to any person who wants an accounting position at our company. The test weeds out the people who interview well and appear to know accounting but don't really understand debits and credits. She passed the bookkeeping test with flying colors. The final step was a background check. This is where we were shocked. She had been convicted of embezzlement. This was public record. She didn't mention the conviction in any of the interviews. She knew that had she mentioned it, there would be no chance of being hired. She was betting that we wouldn't do a background check. Okay. So so we didn't hire her. The colleague who recommended her didn't know the conviction until I told him. We did find a very qualified CFO who picked up the nuances of our business quickly. And then the current CFO trained him and was available for questions when she moved. What I learned: the interview process must include a background check. It is your hard-earned money that the bookkeeper will be handling. A clean background check gives you a little comfort. Implement these company procedures. Administer a bookkeeping test. Email me and it's at the email address if you would like a free copy of the bookkeeping test and answers. We may post that on our page too, if that's a working email address.
Yeah, that is. That's Ruth's email.
Okay, so you guys, we will post that on that on the page as well. Complete a background check. This should be done for all prospective employees, not just prospective bookkeepers. If you have employees who go to customers' homes and businesses, background checks are essential. Many companies can provide a good background check for a small investment. Drug test. Oh my God. Yes. Marijuana smokers, I'm talking about you mainly. But drug test applicants before hiring. Many companies also drug screen prior to hiring. This is critical with businesses where employees drive company trucks or go to customer homes or businesses. So, yeah, I mean,
that's true. That's true. I mean, I think all those things are necessary. But here's the thing: when dealing with our people who haven't had, you know, how can I say, you know, we've had many deficits Like, how do you screen those things out? That's what we have to really be looking at, you know. If somebody is convicted of something, what is it that they're convicted of, you know? I mean, we can definitely, you know, I don't want to say be lenient, because I don't want to be lenient. You know, this is money, this is my business. But, you know, if there's been a certain time period, if it just depends on the crime, I think. You know, you could take everything as a case-by-case basis. But the drug thing? No. No. No, no, no drugs. I mean, you can't have somebody using drugs and operating your business. I mean, that just doesn't work. I mean, it just totally doesn't work. I mean, I despise that craziness that comes from using drugs. But, you know, that's another thing, you know, our people have had to deal with. So you almost have to be like a community service worker, to be honest with you, when trying to work with our people, because we do have some very unique needs. Now, this book is not catered. You know, maybe we need to make a book like that catered to our people. I don't know. But this book is not catered to those individual situations that we have as a people, you know, but it is very, very helpful, I would say. Okay, so let's see. Don't give out. I don't know anybody that gives out bonus checks. We can kind of skip that one.
Right.
You know, we cannot go through the whole book, guys. We just can't, because it's a very big book, a large book. But it's definitely worth purchasing. If you would like to purchase, we'll give out our information right now. But, of course, when Ruth comes on, you can purchase it directly from her website or Amazon. But you can reach us at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. If you're having some trouble purchasing the book, we'll make sure that you can get a copy of it. But how about number six, Robert? Don't use signature stamps?
Yeah, you know, don't use signature stamps. It says here, started a business with two other partners. I was focused on sales, one partner on operations, and the other did the books. It was the perfect startup because each manager, is that supposed to say manager? Yeah, I guess. It was the perfect startup because each manager was focused on the critical area of business. We decided that two signatures were necessary for any check that was written on a company bank account. The thinking was that two signatures would account. Wait a minute. Two signatures will make all owners aware of money going out of the company. This seemed to be a good practice, too. One of the owners started to have health problems and was not present in the business as much. We decided to have a signature stamp made of his signature and gave it to the partner who was responsible for the financial segment of the business. This was the wrong person to give the stamp to. Why? This partner was embezzling at least $50,000 from the business. Ooh. Okay. How did he do it? Whenever he wrote a company check, he had two signatures, his and the signature stamp. Mm. He coded the check to whatever he felt would not be noticed. $50,000 is less than $1,000 a week. Usually he coded it to things that would not be noticed because the expenses were very large as a rule. I usually didn't pay attention to the financial statements. After all, I trusted my partners. I decided just to check a statement. What caught my eye was the financial partner coded some of the checks to penalties. I knew that the company paid their payroll taxes on time, so I started investigating when he was not there. I found the checks from the bank statements and knew what was going on. Going back at least a year, the theft added up to more than $50,000. Quite frankly, it was probably more, but I was sick to my stomach and quit investigating there. I told the non-embezzling partner, and we confronted the thieving partner. We showed him the proof. We decided not to prosecute him because we were in a small town and couldn't stand the embarrassment. In fact, we didn't fire him either. What I learned. Even with signature stamps, a partner not directly involved with the finances must review the bank statements. All partners must review the financial statements each month. Implement these company procedures. Do not use signature stamps, flat out. Just don't use the signature stamps. If you require two signatures on checks, they should be two signatures, not a signature and a signature stamp. Review financials every month. The other partners trusted the financial partner and never looked at the statements each month. Had they done so, they might have seen the penalty expenses and questioned them.
Yeah, because like they said, there was no, they paid their taxes on time, so there was no reason for any penalties. Ooh, that's crazy.
You got really, you really got to choose your people very wisely in going into business. Get that out of your mouth. Hold on 1 minute. I'm sorry, guys. Put that down, Khalil. Don't put that in your mouth. Y'all have to forgive me. I'm a father too, so I gotta keep my eye on my prize. Yes, thank you. So I mean, wow. You have to choose.
That's crazy. I mean, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I think we like to see the good in people, but we don't like to think about the dark and sinister. And you know, people do start out good, but then they're faced with situations. Health concerns, and they need money. I mean, that's, you know, we really, like you said before, can't say what we wouldn't do. I mean, we would like to think that we wouldn't do such diabolical things and cause people harm, but shoot, I know I've done some things that I never thought I'd do. But definitely in business, I mean, you just have to be safeguarding yourself, the business, and the employees from the get-go. So you don't have to worry about those things, you know? It's just the smartest thing to do.
And, you know, I'll say you can't take nothing for granted. You just can't be lackadaisical on no front when it comes to handling your business. You can't allow, even when you have family involved, you can't, because this is family, okay, they got my back. Even when it's a best friend involved, oh, this is my best friend, I know she or he would not do this to me. You can't do it. Even when it's your spouse involved, your husband, your wife, you have to, male, female, either one, whichever one of you are the business person, you just, it's not personal, you have to mind your business. You just have to do that. You have to mind your business, because sometimes people make mistakes. Sometimes people get relaxed. Sometimes people have things that they want and it's not going their way, and or whatever the reason is, you just have to be a good business person and dot your I's and cross your T's. You just have to do that. And I'm saying this stuff, and you know, we run a business, and we're no different from anybody else. Business entrepreneurship is a lot of work. It really is. And when you're a small business and you've got a lot of merchandise, it's a lot of work. Inventory, all this type of stuff. You know, if you're not there 24/7 mentally, then you're gonna be slacking. It's just no doubt about it, because you can't run a business part-time. You cannot do it. I don't care what nobody say. If you got a business that's up and going 5 days a week, 7 days a week, You cannot run that business part-time. You just can't do it. You know, if you, if you're not making the money to hire in people who do inventory, people who monitor videos that they're looking for theft, there are companies out here that do everything that you can't do. But if you don't have the money to hire these companies to do everything that you can't do in your business, then you have to eat, sleep, and think 24/7 about your business. You cannot do your business part-time because you don't do your business any justice. If you part-time your business, somebody else is going to be part-time in the money. Part of the time, you're going to get your money. Part of the time, you're not. You know? So, and that's just how this thing goes. Those people that are working for you that know that you can't be there or that you are not there when you really need to be there, they have found ways to take your money from your business. They ain't going to tell you that, but they have, because they may test you. I'm just going to take this item here or two of these items today, and let's just see if anything is being, if anything would be said about it. And the next day will come around, nothing's being said. I'm telling you this, guys, I was an employee myself at one time, and I wasn't always the most honest person in the world working for somebody else. I had to grow and mature and have and develop self-respect for myself. And then once I started having self-respect for myself and value myself, no, I didn't want to take from anybody, you know. And then when I got a business, I saw it even more clear why you should have self-respect and why you shouldn't steal. Because when you work hard for your whatever it is that you have, I mean, you put your blood, sweat, and tears in that. You don't want nobody coming to taking it. So, you know, so what I'm saying is from, I'm not a, I ain't always been the guy that I am today. So I've worked for people where I was in position and I didn't like these people, these employees, some black, majority of them white, but I didn't like them. So I studied whatever I could, I saw the loopholes, and if I wanted to take $5 here, $10 there, I did that. So I know this from experience. I'm not ashamed to say this. So now moving into having my own business, I know that this is just human nature. It is. People that need stuff or people that just don't like you can sabotage one way or the other. I can't stand your person. I don't like the way you talk to me. You call me, you say you my boss. I don't want no, especially coming from us as black people, how are you going to be my boss and you black? You look like me.
Well, the thing is, people come up with all kinds of reasons, I mean, or rationalities to do that,
exactly.
You know, to steal. And I mean, like the stories are saying, even the most moral person, I mean, this lady who was the bookkeeper, I mean, she's signing a check, and I mean, she didn't think anything would be caught. But the bottom line is, I mean, people talk about karma and all this other stuff. You will be caught. You know, the what's done in the dark is bought in the light. What is it? Something about the washing machine. Everything in the wash comes out in the rinse or some kind of thing. But bottom line is you have to be that one person that is protecting yourself, the business, and also the employee. And in doing that, things will come out better. You'll have less shrinkage. And I mean, you'll just be at peace of mind. We do have our guest on the line. I do see her there. So why don't we do this? We'll go into the break. You listen to Blacks in Business Radio, BIB Radio. And we are here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Go ahead and let us take this break, and we'll be back in a second.
Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the second and final hour for BIB Radio. I am one of your hosts. My name is Cece Harry, and I'm joined by my co-host, Brother Robert 11X. Brother Robert, are you still there?
Yes, I just had to unmute myself.
No, okay. Well, I didn't mute you, but it's okay. I'm glad to have you back. Okay, and everyone listening, if you would like to chime in, feel free to press **, and we can surely get you in on the show. For those of you that are listening via the internet and you'd like to call in, the phone number is area code 704-802-5056. And if you press **, you can get right in. We will happily answer your questions. If you're listening by podcast, feel free to reach out to us at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com, and we will surely answer your questions there. All right. So why don't we go ahead and do this? Welcome our guest on. Her name is Ruth King. Let's get her on. Welcome, Ms. King. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing this evening?
We are wonderful. We are so grateful that you decided to come on our show. I have been wanting to get you on for quite some time because I enjoy your platform. So just remind our listeners again of your platform and what it is that you have going on right now.
My platform is helping small businesses become more profitable, understanding the financial side of business, so that which is actually pretty easy. And probably some of your listeners are going, you got to be crazy. But the reality it's addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and we have calculators these days. So I love to see it when the light bulbs go on. I've written 4 books, The Courage to be Profitable, The Ugly Truth About Cash, The Ugly Truth About Small Business, and The Ugly Truth About Managing People. And all of them are geared with stories that can help you run businesses better, as well as making sure that you don't do some stupid things. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. Now, what is it that actually got you into entrepreneurship?
I have been an entrepreneur since I've been a kid. When I was a kid, I had, I was the proverbial one who had a lemonade stand. I sold flowers. I did any sorts of odd jobs that I could to make money in those days. And I've always known that I was going to have a business when I grew up. And so I do.
Okay. Wow. Now, were both of your parents entrepreneurs or just your father?
Just my father and my grandfather were both entrepreneurs. Oh. Yes, they both were.
Oh, wow. Well, you got it honestly. That's wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. So as we are floating through this wonderful book, I mean, this is like near and dear to us because, Robert and I we have a rather large booth at a flea market. And as we are growing, we are trying to figure out how to hire people and eliminate the theft and shrinkage without spending tons of money in some sort of security that really doesn't work, and how to hire the right people who really have, the best interest at heart for your business. I mean, do such people actually exist?
Yes, they actually do. You just have to find them. They're hard to find. But you have to hire the attitudes, and you can do training later. And the hard thing is, amazingly, a lot of the small business owners that I work with find their employees in restaurants. They are the hostess. They are a great waitress, and they have great people skills. And some of them make great employees in other places because working in restaurants is tough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not, and I don't mean to say that you shouldn't be working in a restaurant, but it's good experience, gives you exposure to a lot of different people, and can lead to stepping stones to other things.
Okay. Well, that is very good to know. So we actually should be looking for those potential employees when we go out to restaurants and other public places.
Right. See how they handle you and see how they react to you and see how they talk to you and see whether they're excited and see whether they're enjoying what they're doing. They've got great personality styles, because that's what you need for your flea market booth, right? You need somebody mm-hmm. who'll talk to people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We definitely need people who are not just trying to sit behind the counter and collect the check. We need those people that are going to be interactive, because there are other people that sell the very thing that we sell, but the thing that's going to sell is the person who's going to sell to the person. So
exactly.
We definitely need those interactive people. Go ahead, Robert.
Right. Hey, Ms. King, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Robert?
I'm doing wonderful. And the book that we've been going through reading is an excellent read, and I'm going to tell you why. Because often when I tell my story, I don't tell the high points of my story about entrepreneurship, because most time you hear all the good. But the real juice is in the stuff that you got in your book. The real juice is in the not so comfortable, the losses. That's the real lessons for me when it comes to being an entrepreneur. Let me hear the rough and tough part of it, because the easy part, everybody can get through that. But it's that rough and tough stuff. It's the stealing. It's the personalities, the mean attitudes. That's the stuff that I need to hear your story about, and you share a lot of that in that book, and I so appreciate that.
Yeah, everybody in that book is hopeful that people will read it and not make the mistakes that they made. We all 50 people that I interviewed, almost to a person, said the same thing. We want people to understand the mistakes we made so that they don't make them.
And see, I bear witness to the fact about going into a restaurant, you know, waiters. I used to wait tables a long time ago. And it was me waiting tables that I knew at that young age. I was probably 18 years old. I knew at that young age the way I was waiting tables that I should have me a business. Mm-hmm. Because it was through the customer service that people would tip me good. They, you know, yep. begin to become familiar with me. Then I went from waiting tables into sales, and I took a job as a car salesperson, and that's when the icing was on the cake for me. I sold cars, this one car lot, it was a little shiesty. They really were good, but then they did some shiesty financing, and when I caught on to what was going on, I refused to do it. They fired me and let me work a whole weekend. After the weekend, I no longer had a job. But what happened was, I told everybody that bought a car from me, I would always tell them the truth about the car. If they was excited about it, then I would say, no, that car doesn't run good. It looks good and smells good, but it doesn't run good. But I would tell them that, because I'm a consumer as well. And so
sure.
when you run across waiters and waitresses, me and Cece go out all the time, and when we run across good customer service, we value good customer service. But bigger than that, that speaks volumes about the person. And I always say, I may always ask that person, or I may say to them, you should own your own business. Because one of the most important things to me about a business is customer service. And if you got good customer service and good personality, you can really own your own business if you just go the next step, you know, do the other responsible stuff to own it. But that's the main part of the business to me. It's the customer service and good personality.
And you also have, you know, that's helpful because you enjoy talking with people and taking care of their needs, and that's really important because the owner of the company is usually the best salesperson for the company. simply because it's your business.
Exactly.
And yeah, that's why I know. Go ahead.
No, that's
I just, I know I love interacting with the customer. I mean, my biggest thing is like, if they walk in and then they're about to walk out and they didn't buy anything, I get a natural high when I make them buy something that they didn't even know. They didn't even know that they needed until they talked to me. I mean, because I just have a way of dealing with each customer as an individual. It's like there's a specific script for everybody that walks in. You know, you may have somebody excited to come in and they already know what they want because they're your regular shopper. Great. But I'm still going to sell you something else. Then you have the people that just wander in because they've never been in there before. And, you know, they come on in and, you know, they're still going to shop because I'm going to make sure that they know that they need to shop with me. I mean, but no matter who you are, if you're walking out of my spot without buying something, I like to remind you that you did come to the flea market to buy something. So let's see what it is that you came here to buy, you know, and if I don't have it, I will modify whatever it is that you thought you needed into what it is that I feel like you need. And I'm going to sell that to you. So, I mean, in doing that, you have to be very energetic. You have to be engaging with the customer. You can't be in your phone. I mean, you just have to really make sure that that customer feels and knows that they are the most important thing right now in your store.
Yep, that's true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But let's get back to the book because, you know, that's what our that's what our interview is supposed to be about, is this book. Now, now in writing this book, I'm going through it. What was the most tragic thing that you saw? Like, what was the most tragic instance that you saw in this book for different stories from the people?
Wow. I mean, we all had different things that happened to us that were really awful. There was one woman who lost 80% of her business because the government changed the rules in one day and took 10 years to come out of it, but she actually did come out of it, did survive it, you know, clawing her way back up. Another guy had a banker that basically said, we don't like your loans anymore, and I'm calling your line of credit and your mortgages and everything else like that. You know, you got 30 days. So, I mean, there's all sorts of things in the books. All of them, actually, are all stories, and they're all meant to help you, again, not do the things that we did. So, number one, don't put all of your eggs in one basket, i.e., don't, you know, let one customer have more than 30% of your business, have one bank and one banker that you deal with. This way, if you know, as your money is spread out amongst all different banks, you know, if one bank decides they don't like your type of loan anymore, you've got several other banks you can go to who all know you pretty well too. So those are some of the things that really happened, you know, as we got through the stories in those books.
Wow. Well, I definitely can relate to, you know, some tragedies that have happened in here. But, you know, as people go into entrepreneurship and business, you know, they don't really expect things to happen, I don't think. I don't think that they, you know, they kind of jump in it like with this very excitable attitude, but they just don't realize the different things that can happen.
Well, yeah, and not only that, you know, the book is really a book of hope.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, this is what, you know, we did. These are the things that you can do not to have happen to us what happened to us. I mean, if you enjoy learning from the mistakes of others, which you should so that you don't make them,
mm-hmm.
not to say you're not going to make mistakes, but if you will learn from the mistakes of others and learn from everything that we went through, you're not going to make those mistakes, you know. And so we've saved you heartache. We've saved you money. I've had comments from people from the book who basically said, I read the book and there's no way I'm going to become an entrepreneur because I didn't realize some of the things that you all go through. And then I've had entrepreneurs, had one who said, I didn't know whether to laugh or cry when I finished the book because I've gone through a lot of the things that are in there. And you just, you know, it's meant to help. I mean, all the books that I do are meant to help. The Ugly Truth About Managing People is that, you know, all these management things that go on that you need to pay attention to. the courage mm-hmm. to be profitable is, you know, how to really understand in English what a profit and loss statement and a balance sheet is, and making sure that you get and stay profitable, and how to do it in 30 minutes a month. You know, being in business requires that you have to understand the financial side of business. None of us started our business to do that, unless you're mm-hmm. a CPA or a bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. But that's what keeps us in business, is knowing the financial side.
Right. So. That's true. That's true. We were talking about that earlier today. You know, you jump into a business because you have a passion for. Yeah, we were talking. I had a customer come in today. She buys wholesale from me a bunch of perfumes and colognes. And she uh-huh. said to me, oh, you know what? I'm interested in starting a home care business. And I said, oh, okay, you know, because I'm the infopreneur. That's what I do. I get people information that they need. And so I said to her, funny that you said that. Last week, we had a lady on the show who is a home care provider, and her business is only a year old. And I'm sure that she would happily show you the ropes. And so,
sure.
Yeah, so I totally began to make those connections for her. But then I went back and I told Robert, I said, okay, well, Robert, she needs a building, because Robert knows how to buy real estate without using banks and without using credit. He does owner financing. And so I was telling her, you know, she's probably going to need a building. And so we really need to help her do that. But she also needs to know that it's not some easy thing. You really have to have your ducks in a row financially. You know, you really have to know that, you know, maybe you didn't get into this to be knowing about money and all this other stuff. But when you're dealing with this type of business, especially, you have either got to be ready to hire a team to do these things for you, or you got to be ready to be an on-point one-man band to make sure, you know, everything is going the way that it needs to go, because you're dealing with the government, you're dealing with people's health and people's lives and numbers. I mean, it's just a serious business.
Yeah.
The administrative yeah. part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's more than a notion. Definitely. And you know, that part of it, you know, you just got to know it. Like Ms. King was saying, know your numbers. Definitely, you got to know the financial part of it. You just have to know it. All of it. You have to have a balance in it, you know, because you don't want to come up short on the end that really matters the most. You could be the greatest personality. You could be the greatest people's person and all that. But if you come up short on the end that really matters the most, and that is what keeps you in business, that's the finances, then you're not going to be in business long.
And with that, with the home care type of business and anything caring for people, you're most likely dealing with licensing and government, and you really don't want to screw up there, because those people will eat you alive, okay? So you have got to make sure that you have things in order when dealing with the government. Ruth, can you kind of speak to that?
Well, you've got to not only with the healthcare regulations, you got to understand how to pay your payroll taxes, how to pay your income taxes, how do you, you know, and what the quarterly requirements are for making sure that you pay your income taxes on time, and making sure that you pay your payroll taxes on time, both to the federal, to the state, to the unemployment, and all those sort of things that go on. And there are usually local governments, you might have an inventory tax once a year. You got to know what's going on in your state and your regulations. And the fastest way to go out of business is one of two ways. Number one, not abiding by the federal state licensing laws, and number two is to buy something for 50 cents and sell it for a quarter or, you know, something like that. And then you can grow yourself out of business very fast. And what many people forget is it's not only the cost of the materials and the cost of labor to produce those materials and the cost of supplies, but it's also the overhead piece, i.e., you know, what piece of the rent, one piece of the light bulb. Even if you're working out of your home, you can take a piece of your home off your taxes, talk to your CPAs about that. But it's also those other things that you've got to have just to stay in business that cost money. And you have to make sure that you're, you know, covering those payments as well as the direct cost.
Mm-hmm. And all those things line up. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ms. King, let me ask you this question, because now we are in a new time frame of life in terms of technology. Now, and I know I'm probably sure a lot of the people that I'm assuming, a lot of the people that you spoke to, that spoke in the book, were probably older, from maybe a more mature generation, not the baby boomers, not the young technology children. So now with things like the malls becoming like dinosaurs, because now malls are emptying out, technology is coming in and changing everything around. How does that affect what used to be and all the things that we're talking about right now? How does technology put us on a new playing field with these things that we're talking about that really means something to us, you know, in terms of good service and this and that? How is technology affecting what's in that book, from people saying what they're saying in the book?
Actually, it's not, because technology is used so that we get information faster, we can ask questions faster, but customer service will always be customer service, and people want to feel like they're being taken care of. There are some ways to do it with technology, but there are also some ways to do it where you just have to get face-to-face with somebody and make sure that you take care of them and they feel taken care of. So I use technology as a tool. It's kind of like, you know, way back in the early 80s, we started getting fax machines. I mean, now those have all gone by the wayside. We're now using a lot of the internet. We're getting information faster, but that doesn't take away from the knowledge that you've got to understand the fundamentals of business, which are sales, marketing, financials, and operations. That doesn't change at all. It's a new tool.
Yes, it is a new tool, but I think that we have so many people that, us being one of them, who need to really take an inventory of the inventory that we're not inventorying, seriously. I mean, seriously, because we just go, we open the door and rake in the dough and then go out and buy some stuff and, rake in the dough. I mean, it's just a cycle, but if you're not keeping track of things appropriately, I mean, that's one of the ways that, you know, your business is truly going down, because you don't even realize how much money you're losing. You don't even realize what you could be saving. You don't realize who's stealing what. You don't. I mean, even us, like if we walk in our store, like this is my rule now. I said, if we need something from there, we have to buy it. You can't just go in there and get it. Yeah, you can't just walk in there. I need a toothbrush and walk out. No, we need to buy the toothbrush.
Yeah. I mean, inventory is a bet. Inventory is a bet. You're going to buy things on a bet because you haven't sold it yet. You're buying things thinking that you're going to be able to sell it, and sometimes bets are good, and sometimes your bets are bad. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you have more good bets than bad bets.
Right.
But you're spending your cash on a bet that you're going to be able to sell something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Robert is a big bettor. I mean, majority of the time he is right, because he loves selling. He loves selling so much that he wants to open 10 stores. He's on store number 2. He is right now in the process of putting together the second store. I think he's working on the floor right now. Are you working on the floor right now?
Yeah, actually, we're multitasking. I got another building right next door to the building that we're opening the store, and I just leased that out. So the guy got a dumpster out front. He's moving very fast. So now I'm over there pulling shelves out. I was painting the floor, and so now I got half the store set up to where if you want to come in and patronize us while we're doing a renovation at the same time, you know. But yeah, that's what I'm working on. So I got two projects I'm working on at the same time, and this, you know, it's not too complex or complicated, but you know, it definitely is a lot of mental power. I mean, you got to really be multitasking in your mind. But we're going to open up 10 stores, this is something that I said I wanted to do a while back, and I put that on hold for, you know, personal reasons. And then now I'm back at that point, you know, and this is something that I just love doing. Business, retail business for me is just something I just love doing because I know so much about it. We talk about trade shows on our radio show. I've been, and CeCe's been with me to quite a few trade shows. Me and her went together, but prior to me and her getting together, I started going to these trade shows in Las Vegas, and oh my God, it's just
Ruth speaks at trade shows. That's what her information says, so she knows about trade shows.
Oh yeah, you're right. I did see that. So Ruth, what trade shows have you spoke at?
Oh my gosh, lots of them over the years. I mean, I've been speaking for almost 30 years, so over the years, I've spoken probably, you know, a couple, 2 to 3 a year that I speak at least. And so the thing about trade shows is it's like walking into your booth at the flea market, except that, you know, it's a temporary thing. People will sit there behind their iPhones or their, you know, and text and totally ignore people who are going by, and they wonder why they are not, you know, selling any, getting leads, whatever, that, you know, you're there for the trade show.
Yep.
And then there are others who engage people as they walk by, which I really like to try and do. If I'm going to do a trade show, and, you know, and I've been a lot of book shows over the years, I'll always ask, do you own a small business? And some people say yes, some people say no. If they say no, do you know somebody who does? And then I'll get them involved to come and look at some of the books. And that's how I generally do it. But I mean, I'll stand out there. If I sit behind a counter or something like that, I've lost.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Get yourself out there and talk to people and engage more, you know, of the customer service thing we started talking about.
Have you done a lot of trade shows in Las Vegas?
I've done a few in Las Vegas. I prefer not to do them in Las Vegas. I like to do them in other places, but because I've been to Las Vegas so many times, it's like it's getting boring.
Oh wow!
Well, where do you go for trade shows if you don't go to Las Vegas?
I'm going to do one in Orlando in a couple of weeks. I was just in Washington D.C. doing one. Where else? Texas, places, you know, just around the country.
Okay, well, we definitely need to be connected with you so you can enlighten us on the ones that you are going to, because that is like a staple for Blacks in Business Radio. We talk about trade shows all the time because it is just one of those things that people in business have no idea about, yet they need to be there. So we always, always talk about trade shows. And when we're at the trade show, we do like Facebook Lives and, you know, we interview different people that are there, and we do observe those ones that are just sitting behind the thing on their phone. You can tell that they're not even involved. You know, somebody just hired them to be there, you know. And as a matter of fact, we are working to become, I don't even know if what you would call that at a trade show, because I'm actually a brand ambassador, but we're looking to be brand ambassadors at the trade show for certain companies, you know, because we don't particularly have a product line ourselves right now, but we are looking to be brand ambassadors at the trade show. We were actually speaking with a young lady yesterday with a product that Robert really knows about, but we discovered, although this product is very profitable and very popular, these people have not gone to the trade show with their product. The woman told me they're more interested in hiring sales teams to go out into different places. And I said, do you realize that you're working backwards? And she still just didn't get what we were talking about. So we are looking to engage with those businesses that need to be at the trade show and just represent them there.
Yeah, and you guys would probably do really well at that because you enjoy talking to people.
Oh, I love talking. It's great. A closed mouth does not get fed. Absolutely.
And it's an opportunity. This is a business opportunity. When you go to a trade show, you come back with more ideals than what you went there with. You may have gone there thinking that you're going there to make a wholesale purchase or to meet a manufacturer, but those displays that these particular vendors have at these trade shows are so unique. Some are just so unique and so simple. It's just so enriching to just go there and allow yourself to learn how to do something real simple, but yet get a profound effect from it. Every time I'm in Las Vegas, mainly the shows I go to, like the clothing show, the Magic show, that's the clothing show. It's called Magic, and then the ASD show,
and the one in Chicago.
The Chicago show too. But the displays that you see at these shows, because they have to get so much merchandise in such a small space, that's one of the things that I pay very close attention to, because I love real estate too. Even though I love retail, I love real estate. So all of your space in your store is real estate. All of it, every square inch is real estate. And if you don't know how to maximize every square inch, you're losing money when you don't know how to maximize every square inch. And they have, again, for everything that you need in business, they have companies that actually do that. They have companies that come out and design your store, maximizing every square inch. So when you go to a trade show and actually take a visual, you could take pictures of all these different setups. And they're not extravagant setups in most cases, but there are some companies that have billions of dollars that can do all that extravagant stuff. But for the most part, these are maybe million-dollar companies that want to have put things on a budget. And you can go there and look at that and see these setups and come right back to your hometown and go to your display warehouse store or display wholesale store, a store supply warehouse or whatever it's called in your neighbor, in your community, and buy these displays and set your store up to where when people come into your store, it's pleasing to the eye. I'm big on display. I'm big on how your store looks. My store, we have to be organized. We have to be clean. Even though we're a small business, I want it to have $1 million feel. I want the customer service as well as the cleanliness and the look to be all one united. So you got to get to the trade shows, people. You just got to get to the trade shows.
Right, most definitely. Now, Ms. King, let us know about your show. How often is it produced? How would people get involved? And I think you have a membership.
Right. ProfitabilityRevolution.com is the website. Mm-hmm. And we have probably north of 600 videos on HR, sales, marketing, financials, operations there right now. Membership is $97 a year. So, I mean, it's less than a buck a video for all, and it's totally meant for small businesses. It is not meant for large businesses. As we jokingly say, if you need Six Sigma, we're not the company for you and not the place for you, but if you need ideas to make payroll next Thursday, we probably have some ideas for you and some of the shows. So it's geared totally towards small business. And basically, it's $97 a year. Website is ProfitabilityRevolution.com.
Wow, yes, that is excellent, because I've been there myself, and I've also caught you on YouTube. I actually first came in contact with you because I was facilitating getting David Anderson to your set live. That's where I first came in contact with you. And I was just so impressed at how you handle your business and the knowledge that you have about small business and your ability to help people right where they're at. So, I mean, I was very impressed with that. Now, if people are just starting out, like I met a lady today on the phone, she's in Florida. If people are just starting out, how would you direct them? Like, I mean, does it matter what they're doing, or are there just some ABCs that they should know?
No, there's there's the fundamentals of business, no matter whether you're starting out or whether you have been in business for 20 years. You mm-hmm. got to sell, you got to market, you got to mm-hmm. do operations, and you got to do financials. Mm-hmm. And whether you're starting out or whether you've been doing it for a really, really long time, if you're doing it for a really, really long time, there's probably some new ideas that you can use that people are talking about, writing about. And I've interviewed a lot of people who have written different books that actually can help small businesses, and also people who are doing really some really unique things in our industry. Like yesterday, I interviewed a guy who's called himself the subconscious coach. And I said, okay, I'm going to ask you this question because I'm curious, and I'm sure a lot of our viewers are curious, what is a subconscious coach? And what he does is he gets to the bottom of why you are stuck, you know, why your business is stuck at $1 million, or why your business is stuck at, you know, $200,000, and there's something in you personally as the owner holding it back, and he digs in and has a way of making sure that he finds out what it is so that you can break through it and go to the next level and the next level and the next level. I had never heard of a subconscious coach before.
So people actually pay him to get unstuck?
Yep. They pay him to get unstuck. Yep.
Oh, my goodness. We need to have him on the show because I know personally, you know, there are times when we do get stuck. And
oh, everybody gets stuck.
Yeah.
I get stuck. We all get stuck. Yeah.
Well, some people get stuck and don't become unstuck, and I definitely don't want to become that person, because when you become unstuck, what is next? Then you become employed.
No. If you get unstuck, then you can take your business to the next level. You can generate more revenue. You can generate more profit. You can generate more really cool things for your employees. I mean, all the things happen when you finally get rid of all the stuckness. I don't know another way to put it is, you know, if you're in stasis and your business is just being there and you're not growing and you're just stuck.
You're just spinning around. I guess I should say, if you don't become unstuck, then you become employed, because you don't even see the light at the end of the tunnel. You just say, okay, well, let me just go work here. Somebody offers you a job. Like Robert has a wonderful story about how he was in such a place, because he was living in his car when we met, and you know, somebody offered him, well, I'll let you tell your own story, but somebody offered him an application to work at General Motors, but that's not him. He's an entrepreneur. So,
yeah.
I mean, he had to discover the way to become unstuck. So that's a very good example right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, so I get some interesting interviews over the years, and we've been doing it now probably 4 years, let's see, 6 years, and got really interesting people who come on and talk about different ways of looking at the world and things that can help them grow their businesses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I definitely encourage everyone to tap in and tune into your platform, because like you said, it's for small businesses. You know, a lot of people get overwhelmed and inundated about what being in business is, when, I mean, a lot of times they're already doing business and they just don't call it that because they don't want that sort of stigma. They don't want to be put in a category, I don't know, some kind of weird things. But I think that they should definitely listen to what it is that you have to say. Also enjoy you on YouTube. Now, Ruth, I typed your name in and there was some lady that was like 80 something years old, and that is not you.
That is not me. Yes, he's been around longer than I have, unfortunately. Or fortunately.
But I got scared. I said, "Wait, I know she's not 80 anything years old. So this has got to be somebody else." But we need to make sure that they can get your books and your information and become profitable in their small business. So let them know how they can reach out to you directly for consultation, to get your books, and to just listen to your program.
Okay, I'm going to give you several websites and my email address.
Okay.
The website for the books is www.thecouragetobeprofitable.com. Thecouragetobeprofitable.com. The website for the videos is profitabilityrevolution.com. And if you get really stuck, email is rking@ontheribbon.com.
rking@ontheribbon.com. And so now you have four books, correct?
Four books. The Ugly Truth About Small Business, The Ugly Truth About Managing People, The Ugly Truth About Cash, and The Courage to Be Profitable.
Okay. Now, would you advise people before they even get to that level of where they're ready to manage people that they go ahead and read that information now?
Absolutely. Start with The Courage to Be Profitable. That's right. The basic. And then right. The Ugly Truth About Small Business will give you things not to do.
That's so powerful. Okay, Robert, do you have any questions for Ruth right now?
Well, I just like the title, The Courage to Be Profitable. I mean, just think about what this the title alone is intriguing, The Courage to Be Profitable. Now, Ruth, what is inside of that title? Because I'm thinking like that title was saying don't underprice yourself, but tell us about what that title means.
The title means that you get your financial statements, you see things that are going wrong, and you have the courage to make the change. I'll give you the story. The book starts with the story of two business owners, and one of them saw his financial statements, knew he was having problems, and had the courage to pick up the phone and say, I need some help, got the help, and, you know, he's doing phenomenally well. The other one watched his business go from $15 million to $8 million, and he knew about financials, and he was afraid to fire people. He basically had to sell his business when it was $6 million in revenue, and he was miserable. So that's the courage not to be profitable, because he saw his business go down year after year, million after million, until he finally had to sell it in the fire sale. That's knowing what's going on and not taking action, even though it hurts.
Putting my head in the sand.
Yeah.
Wow. Gotcha. And I was going to ask you about that. I was going to say, do you know any stories where people have just kind of let their businesses go and just put their head in the sand? But I'm pretty sure you hear lots of them.
I do.
Because they are embarrassed. I remember I had a situation in my business. I was embarrassed, and I didn't feel that there was any place for me to reach out to. I didn't have any resources really around me that could really help me out of the hole. How important is it for you to develop a network of people for support?
Oh, and they can't be your friends. They have to be other business owners.
Right.
Because your friends who are working for as employees have no clue what you go through as a business owner.
Mm.
So you've got to network with people who are actually business owners, non-competitive, of course, and because they can actually help you more than people who are your friends who mean well, but they don't have a clue.
Wow. That's so important.
I got a question. Now, we talked about this a while back on our show. But now, how does one's domestic life play a part in the success or non-success of an entrepreneur?
You got to have the support of a spouse. If your spouse has a problem, if you've got cash flow problems and says, why don't you go get a job, at some point in time, you will get a job or you will be divorced.
Wow. That's a big deal right there.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. The spouse definitely has to be supportive. And if you, I don't even know how you would be with somebody who is not an entrepreneur, but I guess people do it all the time.
They do it all the time. They do it all the time.
Yeah.
And some spouses learn it and get to the point where they understand what entrepreneurs go through, and then the ones that make it, you know, it's their cheerleader behind them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all need support.
And it could be male or female. It doesn't have to be only male entrepreneurs. It could be female entrepreneurs too.
Right. Well, Ms. King, Ruth, we just thank you for joining us. What last words of encouragement do you have for the people?
I think that owning a small business is absolutely phenomenal. Take the time to work on your business, read, make sure you understand the financials, and know that everybody goes through hard times. It's how you get through the hard times that actually makes you successful.
All right. Well, that is so key. Now, we are definitely looking to do business with you later on and stay connected. I can't even tell you how appreciative I am of you coming on this show today. We definitely want to post your information on our Blacks in Business Radio Facebook page so that people can reach out to you and pay that $90-something dollars and go ahead and get that information that they need from your vast library. Ms. King, thank you so much for joining us. Feel free to come back anytime, okay?
I appreciate it. Thanks for your time, and I hope I helped your audience.
Oh, yes, ma'am. We will be in contact. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, that was Ms. Ruth King. Oh, my goodness. I'm always ecstatic when I get somebody exciting on the show. It was kind of like the super nanny all over again, Robert.
Right. It's the super nanny of business.
Yes, the business nanny. Yes, that's what she is. And I'm telling you, when you go on her website and you start digging through all the information, you will want to, like, okay, you know how you look for marathons on TV and you just want to sit there and eat? That's how it is with her stuff. Once you pay that $97 and start digging into the great information that she has, I mean, you will just want to be planted there. So I encourage you all, when you sign up, I mean, because she has a free part too. I mean, there's a free portion of her website, but I would encourage you to pay the $97 and just get into what it is that she's talking about concerning business, because you'll want to be planted there. You'll want to have a notebook. I mean, you might want to have some tabs that you put different sections in, because this information that she has, you can tell that she is very passionate about small business. Not all business, but small business. And I'm telling you, I'm looking at her small business video library right now. Let's see. It says, exclusively for small businesses, ideas, strategies, and information that matters, available 24/7. So you have access to it all the time. Get full access to more than 500 trusted small businesses how-to videos on HR, sales, marketing, finance, operations, personal development, and more. Turn your small business nightmares into pleasant dreams. Below are just a few sample videos from our library. So, of course, we are going to post that in our Blacks in Business Radio Facebook page. You all can join us there, Blacks in Business Radio. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed that. What about you, Robert?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I love entrepreneurship.
And when I go to Atlanta, I'm gonna visit her. See, every time I go to Atlanta, I'm like, man, there's so many businesses and people that I want to visit, but I just never have enough time. But I am going to see if I can go to her studio and go to one of the live showings, because it's just so important to be supported in what you're doing. And it's so important to untangle what it is that you're doing concerning business. I'm not going to say trying to do, because we all are doing it. Sometimes moving at a different rate than what we like, but we're definitely doing it. So I think it's very important to just be supported in what it is that you're doing. So I'm excited, super excited about that.
I thoroughly enjoy the show, as I do most of our shows anyway. But this one here is, this was another great show from BIB Radio, and I hope the audience enjoyed it as well, because these are things that you need to know about going into business, becoming an entrepreneur. You learn from other people's mistake. A wise man learns from other people's mistake, and I should say a wise man or woman really should learn from other people's mistakes, because if you take other people's mistakes and you study them, that puts you that much further ahead, because you know there are certain things that I just look to avoid making those mistakes, and you can move on further ahead. Those mistakes are building or steps for you to not do what we have done, and that's what the basis of BIB Blacks in Business, the radio show, as well as Blacks in Business throughout the United States and out the world was set up for. We wanted to bring you, or we want to bring you the correct information so that you don't have to bump your head trying to find the information. We're going to bring it to you and share it with you. All you have to do is listen and use it, you know. So this is another great example of what we stand for here at VIB Radio and Blacks in Business, period.
Right. I agree. And we are so here to help you. You can email us at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. We're available for a listening ear consultation, whatever it is that you need as pertaining to starting business, information you need for your business. If you need someone to do some sort of research for you, I mean, I love doing that. Like, whatever it is that you need for your business, we would like to reach out to you. Or we would like for you to reach out to us so we can reach back out to you. We would like to also invite you to have a radio commercial on our program. We would love to run your commercial. Reach out to us again at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. We will gladly get your business on air. If you would like to do an interview with us, feel free to do the same thing. Reach out, weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. Well, I think that this was a tremendous show. I had a great time interviewing Ms. King. Hopefully we'll get to talk to her again soon. It's just so inspiring to see that type of platform going on. But yes, that's all I have tonight. Robert, what about you?
Well, again, you guys tune in next week at the same time. Every Thursday, 7 o'clock Central Time, VIB Radio. CC Harry, the host, and I'm Brother Robert 11X, the co-host. If you want to reach out to me, you can catch me at Robert 11X, spelled out 11, E-L-E-V-E-N, X minor with the E.
Okay, M-I-N-E-R. You know they can reach you at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com.
Yes, ma'am, and definitely there. You can email us. So tune in, you guys, and come back and listen to us again. We're going to bring you some more good information that we know you can use. And you guys, just stay safe.
Yes. And thank you, Scotty, again, for facilitating this wonderful program. We look to talk to you all next week at the same time. Have a great night. We'll be right back.